It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that actually tastes like a candy bar. You can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Now, as always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And hey, do me a favor, subscribe to us on iTunes, on Spotify, drop us a review, leave us some stars, share the podcast on your social media channels. I would appreciate all that if you appreciate the Rockets content that we bring to you every single day. So with that, for today's show, I am joined by former Rocket and current Bucks broadcaster, Steve Novak. How are you doing today, Steve?
Hey, I'm doing really well. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here, man. So first things first, I got to know, how are you handling everything, you know, everything going on right now with quarantine and whatnot?
Oh, boy, I tell you, I feel like we're in a better place than we were. I guess it's been about 2 months now. So I would say I'm doing well. I'm staying sane. The kids are healthy. The family is healthy. We've had a lot of family time, but there's no doubt. I think we're going through what most people are going through, where you're kind of losing your mind at times. But I think a lot of the good news that's come out lately about vaccines and treatments and things getting back to normal has been really positive.
Definitely. Hopefully we'll get back to at least some version of normalcy soon. So what have you been doing to pass the time? I know you mentioned, you know, spending some time with the family, but anything past that?
Oh, definitely. I've taken up quite a new hobby. I've been landscaping like I've never landscaped before. I've got the lawn looking green. I've got the water feature flowing nicely. And to be honest, it's been crazy to have basketball shut down so much, and you realize you just literally have so much more time for something else. And so, like a lot of dads and moms, I've become a homeschool teacher, like so many people. So it's been kind of crazy, but at the same time, I think we'll look back and probably remember a lot of the positives.
Definitely. Well, unfortunately, this isn't a Locked On Landscaping podcast, so we'll get away from the garden talk for a minute. But so I kind of want to start things off, you know, just kind of if we can reflect a little bit during your rookie and sophomore seasons in Houston, you had two different head coaches. So I want to know, what was it like for you starting with a defensive-minded guy, defensive-minded coach like Jeff Van Gundy, and then transitioning to more of an offensive-minded guy like Rick Adelman?
No, it's a great question. You're absolutely right. My first year coming in, Jeff Van Gundy's a head coach. I played for Tom Crean at Marquette University, and he certainly was a defensive-minded coach as well. And so, he featured me offensively in college and let me be who I was, which was shooting the three ball and spacing the floor and using me on sets. But he really focused on rebounding and guarding and then staying on the floor based on my defense. So I really felt like my transition to Jeff Van Gundy was very much my college experience in terms of that mindset. And so I felt I was very prepared for it, understood it, knew what he was going to be looking for. However, it just wasn't my strength. I mean, I was never the go-to defensive guy, but I think that when the mindset was that you were not good at something and that was why you weren't going to play, that always hurt me, instead of the focus being that, look, what do you do really well? And, you know, I'll put you on the court because of that. And so I think I experienced a little bit of that my first year with Jeff Van Gundy, that he was definitely, you know, a more hard nose. Can you get stops? Can you be in the right spots at all times defensively? And then transitioning in my second year to Rick Adelman, he really was an open offense with lots of movement and a little bit faster pace, you know, shooting the ball in that swing offense. And it certainly, I think, featured me a little bit more. I think Van Gundy absolutely taught me a ton, but there's no doubt in terms of, you know, I think allowing me to be successful for what my strengths were, I think Rick Adelman's offense certainly featured me offensively better.
Do you think the transition might have been a bit more jarring coming straight out of college and going into, say, an Adelman-style offense? Or do you think that would have been, like, because you mentioned, you know, you came from that environment already. So do you think that was, you know, kind of played its hand in your favor in a way?
Yeah, you know, I think because I played for Coach Crane, who's at Georgia now, when I was at Marquette University, I really do. I think he coaches in a very NBA-style way where you've got to understand, you've got to be tough, hard-nosed, you've got to guard, you've got to be able to take charges and get after it and have that toughness to stay on the court. And obviously in the NBA, there's a huge jump, you know, from college to the NBA where all of those things become even more real. So, you know, I think once I got to the NBA, whether I was playing for an Adelman or I was playing for a Van Gundy, I think I was suited. My personal strengths were no doubt on the offensive end. And so, you know, I think throughout my career, I played for, you know, so many coaches while I played for 11 teams and really did find that when you played for somebody who was willing to feature what you do well and focus on what you do well, it's a good fit for you. And so, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, Van Gundy, I think he gave me an opportunity in my first year. He played me minutes and I think, you know, absolutely developed me. But in terms of in my first year in his system, there wasn't as much of a role for me. And so I don't think I played as much, but I think it was also nice knowing that after my second year playing for Adelman that, look, there are different styles. There are different ways to be successful in an NBA offense, you know, playing for Van Gundy and being defense and playing for Adelman and saying, hey, look, it's a lot about offense. And we were successful both years. So I thought in my first 2 years, it was cool to see that there's not just one way to win or one way to be successful.
Now you mentioned, you know, the 11 NBA teams. Out of the coaches that you have played for, who do you feel did kind of match your skill set the best as far as a coach goes?
In the NBA, it was hands down Mike D'Antoni. I mean, he's well known in Rocket Country, and he's been well known in basketball for decades. And I think what he does as a coach is exactly what I was kind of just alluding to: is he features the strengths of his guys. He doesn't really want to hear too much about what his guys don't do well. He's going to put his guys out there. If they shoot the three ball well, he's going to put them out there and have them shoot three balls. If he's a PJ Tucker and he can grind at the five spot, even though he's undersized, he's going to go let him grind because it gives them an advantage offensively. So for me, when I played for Mike D'Antoni in New York for about one full season, he was the guy I think that kind of allowed me to show, I felt like, what my real skills were, what I had worked throughout my entire, I think, life in developing my skills, what they were. He said, look, Steve, if you can make more points, you can score more points than the guy you're guarding, you're going to stay on the floor. And just to hear that out of a coach's mouth was so powerful, because there's times you hear, look, if you don't get stops, if you can't make your guy not score, you're coming out. And Mike D'Antoni was the opposite. So I think for me, he was the guy. Greg Popovich in San Antonio also, I felt like, was a guy who really understood his player's strengths and played to them. But I would say for sure Mike D'Antoni is the one that stood out for me.
And definitely Mike D'Antoni, a guy we are very familiar with here in Rocket Country. And speaking of Rocket Country, coming up, I do want to ask about the question that I'm sure is burning at the back of everybody's minds. We got to get a little bit of discussion going for the 22-game win streak. So we'll get to that in just one moment after a quick word from our friends over at Built Bars. Look, that summer 2020 body may not matter right now, but I'll tell you what does matter, the summer 2021 body. And if you want to get in the right place physically, you know, if you want to try and lose some weight, Built Bars can help you do that. Or even if you're not trying to lose weight, if you're just trying to maintain the weight that you're at, Built Bars can help you do that. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They've got 16 amazing flavors. The bars are soft, they're chewy, they're easy to eat. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars. They have 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate and nut flavors, 8 chocolate and nut-free flavors. My personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse. Can't go wrong with it. Call me basic, whatever you want. You know, I'm just missing my Ugg boots and a Starbucks Frappuccino with this double chocolate mousse, double chocolate mousse Built Bar. But, you know, they're healthy. The flavor profile's behind them. 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of carbs. You know, low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. These protein bars are amazing. And you can go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON to actually get $10 off your first order. So remember, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Steve Novak. Now, Steve, the question that I'm sure everybody wants to get to is, you know, that first season under Coach Adelman, after a bit of a rocky start, a bit of a bumpy start, you guys made NBA history and reeled off 22 straight wins, which at the time was the second longest win streak in NBA history, which very easily could have been stopped at just 7 games. Now, can you walk us through that Kings game and your dagger at the end to keep the streak alive?
Oh, man, it's one of my really one of my greatest memories playing in the NBA. I mean, when you're a young boy and you're out shooting in your backyard or in the driveway or whatever, you dream about making game winners. And, you know, I'm in my second season with the Houston Rockets, second season for me in the NBA. And, look, I was playing on and off minutes, and it was the same even for that game against the Kings. It was the eighth game of what became that 22-game win streak. And I had I think played a few minutes late in the fourth quarter, maybe, and it was obviously a close game. And Adelman, he had the faith in me to say, "Hey, look, we need spacing, we need shooting. We're going to give, you know, Tracy the ball at the top. We're going to let him go ISO one on one. He's the guy that gets the right to shoot the shot and miss it if he wants, or hit the game winner if he can." And really, as the play developed, Tracy was up top. He drove left. It kind of was a fumbled play. And he ended up driving left, and the guy that was guarding me was Brad Miller, and he kind of went over to help a little bit, which I guess you would expect to happen when you got Tracy ISO'd up top. You're going to give him a little more attention, but he came off me just enough that Tracy was able to just kind of throw it back to me, kind of on the right wing. I looped up behind him, got a quick catch, and knocked it down with I think 2 seconds left to win the game. So it was a at the time, you didn't realize the magnitude and the streak that we were on. But obviously, with hindsight, you look back and you go, "Oh, thank God I made that shot, or we'd have blown our opportunity to have a 22-game win streak." So I guess, long story short, I take full credit for all 22 games had I not made that shot.
Hey, absolutely. You won't get any argument from me. Now, I have to know, like, as a shooter, you know, when you're on the court, when you're in that moment, you know, I mean, as fans, we feel the pressure building. You know, we can feel it, the atmosphere, the environment. How do you tune that out as a shooter? Because that's not the only time you've been in that position throughout your career. So just, you know, walk me through your mental process. Do you try and tune out the fans? Do you let that fuel you? How does that work?
You know, like I was saying, you know, you shoot those shots when you're younger, dreaming of hitting a game winner. And I think, to be honest, a game winner, whether you're at the YMCA and you hit a game winner, or you're in the NBA, it's the shot that you want. And I think that really there's some guys that want those shots and some guys that don't. And I think wanting it is part of it, but being able to make the shot is a whole nother part of it. And I think that, you know, my training and understanding and through repetition of it was, you have got to have faith in the practice that you put in and the reps that you put in. And you've got to shoot that last shot the exact same way as you shoot a normal shot in a game. Because if that's the case, you're going to make half your game winners. Basically, if you're a 50% shooter, you're going to have the ability to be at the highest high half the time. And I think, to be honest, unless you have some incredible clutch gene and you're a Jordan-like guy where you can hit more than that, God bless you. But that was my mindset was, look, if this ball gets thrown back to me, one, I have to be ready. I have to think it's coming to me so that I'm in the right mindset. If it doesn't, fine, but I was ready. But if it does, I've just got to catch it and shoot my normal shot. And the truth is, I think that's the most powerful thing you can do is shoot that game-winning shot, that shot that determines the game, the same way that you would shoot every other shot. Because in my opinion, it gives you the best chance of making it, even though obviously that means you can miss it half the time as well.
Now, a pair of guys that had their fair share of game winners throughout their respective careers, Tracy and Yao, you know, they remain to this day one of the greatest what-if duos in NBA history. You know, what was it like playing alongside them?
It was incredible, to be honest, because one, I was a rookie. I come into the NBA drafted by the Houston Rockets, and I'm playing on the same team as Tracy McGrady, a guy whose poster I have in my dorm room. So I had an Adidas ball signed by him from being at ABCD, Adidas camp, a year or two before that. So, I mean, it was truly wild to be on a team of a guy whose poster you have up in your room. And then, like you said, you pair him with a guy like Yao, who, you know, from a distance as a fan, I knew who he was. I'd watched him, how incredible he was. And the rise that he was kind of on. But then to be up close with him and to realize this is a guy who is obviously a superstar and a true giant, but then to be around him and to realize that, you know, this guy has one of the best work ethics that you're ever going to see. I couldn't beat him to the gym my rookie year. He would be there in the gym getting up right hooks and left hooks and 12-footers and 18-footers with Coach Thibodeau before I could even get to the gym. And it was every single day. I mean, he was an incredible example, I think, to have as a rookie, to have a guy like that to watch and to see, look, this is one of the greatest in the NBA, one of the guys who is the hardest to stop, but he's putting in the work and he's, you know, there before even the rookies was incredible. And, you know, Tracy, I think, kind of speaks for himself in terms of, you know, the star power that he had coming in. He was someone I was such a big fan of. So it was special to be on a team with those guys, especially coming in my first year.
Now I've got a kind of a pair of questions for you. One about Tracy and about Yao, but it's the same question. What would be your favorite memory with each of those two guys?
Oh man. You know, I think, you know, with Tracy, he was, a guy who I think got a lot of slack for maybe not having that look of a that killer instinct, but that's just who Tracy was. And you know, one story I really remember was we were in Utah for a game. It was pregame, and Tracy was in the locker room and he was laying on the training room table. And I think I went to go out to go shoot for warmups, and I came back and he was still laying there. And I kind of glanced at him and I was like, I think he's asleep. And Tracy was literally just laying on the training room table, and maybe he had gotten his ankles taped or whatever, but he was basically taking a nap. And I had gone out and got shots, and you know, there was about 20 minutes left on the clock before game started. So we were about to go out there. And I remember about the end of the first quarter, Tracy ended up having, I want to say 19 or 21 points in the first quarter. And I remember at the end of the first quarter thinking to myself, well, I went out there and warmed up. Tracy was in the training room asleep. And you fast forward one quarter later, and the guy's got like 21 points, 19 points in 12 minutes. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy is just a freak. He's just special. He's able to basically show up and get buckets. And I think to me, that was probably one of the craziest memories of Tracy, was just seeing him get hot like that after, you know, barely warming up. And it might have been a back-to-back, and maybe he wasn't going out to warm up that game. But either way, I remember thinking, this guy's a freak. And with Yao, to be honest, you know, the most vivid memory I have is kind of the one I just shared with y'all, was how he was literally in the gym every single day, first guy before even the rookies, working on his right hook and his left hook right around the rim with Coach Thibodeau. And that stands out to me every time I think about him and how successful he was. Obviously, it was a career cut short, but that was who Yao Ming was. And I don't know that everybody knew that he worked like that, and he was literally in the gym, first guy every day, but he was an impressive human being, the way he worked, and you know, his God-given gifts speak for themselves at his size, but he put the work into, and that's 100% what stood out to me, was, you know, he was the first guy to the gym every single day.
Do you think if injuries hadn't been such a big part of both of their respective careers, that they would have been able to pull together and win a chip?
You know, I think it's hard to speculate on, you know, would a guy have won a championship? Because I think, you know, winning a championship, so much has to happen right. And I played with teams where it was guys like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. And, you know, if you said to me, look, if you put those two guys together and you let them play together for 8-9 years, will they win a championship? And I'd say, well, damn right they will. But they didn't. And so, I mean, I think in playing with Tracy and Yao, and you know, those being, you know, 50 plus win seasons both years I was with those guys, you know, it seemed like we were building to something really special. And at the same time, we had lost in the first round both those years to the Utah Jazz, in years that we thought we were absolutely championship contenders. We had a good enough team to win it. And so I think, were we building to something, and could it have really, you know, happened for us? I mean, there's absolutely no doubt we were talented enough. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, you got to have that magic in a bottle. And, you know, sometimes some of those seasons and the way things work out are unexplainable. So I would never say we were for sure going to win a championship, but I'll tell you, if you could have kept those teams together and Yao could have stayed healthy first and foremost, I think that you would have absolutely seen some special years that didn't happen.
Speaking to Yao's health, I do have a question about that 22-game win streak coming up in just a second. But first, I want to get in a quick word from our friends over at Blinkist. Let me tell you guys about one of the most useful apps on my phone. Look, sometimes, you know, it's hard to find the time to sit down and read and really dive into, you know, material like that. And when you don't have the free time to read, you can't really work on your own personal development. But there's an app that actually solves that problem. So Blinkist, it works on your phone, your tablet. It takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books and actually condenses it down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. So they have this huge, massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books that you want to read that you never had the time to read, all for one low price. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with former Rocket Steve Novak. Now, Steve, during that 22-game win streak, right, Yao goes down about halfway through. What was the mentality surrounding the team after learning about Yao's injury, and just how did you guys persevere through that?
You know, it was devastating, and I was young, so I'm not sure at the time when, and I vividly remember the meeting that happened. It was on the court, and the trainers and the doctor walked up with Yao, and, you know, he was banged up at the time with his foot, but we didn't, I think, ever think that, oh, Yao's hurt. He's going to be done for forever. We thought it was worst case. He would need a surgery and he would maybe miss the year, but he'd be back. And they came into the practice gym and we kind of huddled up and they said, you know, we have a little news for you guys. And Yao was there and the doc and the trainer. And they said, you know, Yao is basically, he's going to be done. You know, this isn't the way the foot looks is not healing. And he's likely going to be, you know, done playing basketball. And it was sort of like a surreal, you know, they must be wrong. I'm sure there's going to be some good future news that comes out kind of thing. When it was first told to us, it was devastating because you realized, okay, he's definitely not playing this year. But I at the time definitely thought they'll figure something out or it'll heal or there'll be something that can be done to get him back out there. So I would just say it was disbelief, to be honest, at first. And then when he actually never came back and you realized it was something that was going to be real, I think that it was more than anything just sad because of, I think more than anything, some of the stories I was talking about earlier where you saw the kind of work he put in and, you know, you saw how valuable he was to our team at that time in the franchise. So it was devastating.
And what was the mentality of the guys who, you know, obviously everybody kind of stepped up and, you know, a bigger load was placed on McGrady's shoulders and you know, things like that. But, you know, the two guys that kind of helped fill that gap in the middle, specifically Dikembe Mutombo and Chuck Hayes, what was their, you know, mentality after kind of realizing that they were going to be the anchors, you know, at the five spot?
Yeah, I mean, look, in the NBA, I learned very quickly it is a next man up mentality. With the length of season that the NBA is and the way guys get banged up and when, you know, a player like Yao, your star, goes down, I mean, I was very lucky to be on teams where I had guys like Dikembe and Chuck Hayes and Jawan Howard and Shane Battier, you know, to learn from, because very quickly you realize, look, you have a job to do. You're being paid good money to, look, either back somebody up and do the best you can, or if they go down, you need to step up and be good enough to win games. And so that was certainly the mentality. It was, we're gonna fight with Dikembe and Chuck and those guys. I mean, there was no qualms about it. There was, I don't think, as much disbelief from them. I think both of those guys were more well-suited to understand, look, this is an opportunity for me and, you know, something I'm being asked to step up and do. And like I said, I learned from those guys that the mentality is, look, if you're going to get paid millions of dollars, you're going to step up when the lights are on and do your job and let the medical staff worry about, you know, getting guys back on the court. So, you know, I think that the mentality certainly was, you know, led by some of those veteran guys, that's going to be toughness and we're going to figure it out and find a way to continue to win games.
Is there someone or maybe something from that 22-game win streak that you don't think gets mentioned enough, possibly?
You know, there's not one guy that stands out to me during that streak. I think we got a gift from the owner, from Les Alexander, after that 22-game win streak that was maybe a 2-foot by 3-foot framed, maybe call it a collage. And it had a picture that represented each of the 22 games that we won. And it had a little plaque under each picture. And it said who we played and what the final score was. And it was game 1 through 22. And every player was on there in a different picture doing something that was big in one of those 22 games. It was my shot in game 8. It was, you know, I can picture some of them where it's, you know, Battier diving on the floor. It's Yao dunking the ball on somebody. It was Luther Head shooting a jumper. And it kind of just showed that every guy kind of really did play a role in that. And to be honest, that's how you go on a win streak. When, you know, I'm with the Milwaukee Bucks right now, and it's like some of the win streaks that these guys have been on, there is no doubt it. The streaks happen because it's Eric Bledsoe stepping up. It's Giannis doing what he does, you know, 8 out of 10 games. But on the other nights, it's Chris Middleton going for 40. And, you know, Ersan Ilyasova stepping up. And that's really what I remember from that streak, was it was just a different guy stepping up every night, making a big play. And there were games that guys were out, but it didn't matter. Guys came in and got the job done. And we really were. We were a deep team, and I think that showed, especially with that streak.
Please, please tell me that Rafer's picture was him putting the dance on Sasha Vujicic, the skip to my Lou at the end of the 22nd win, because that is a memory that anybody that was, you know, an avid Rockets fan at the time stands out immediately thinking of that moment. You know, Sasha Vujicic gets in Rafer's face just a little bit, and Rafer's not having any of it. Just love that moment.
No doubt. I'd have to go look. I have it hung in my basement. Kind of in my man cave, but it really is. It's one of my more proud accomplishments, is being on that team and a part of that win streak, which is, you know, one of the, I think, the top 5 win streaks of all time still. And, you know, I probably need to go back and look at some of those picks again, because it was a fun run. And, you know, the first half of it, you don't really realize that you're on that win streak. But then once you're at about 10, 11, 12, you start going, hey, now, let me look at the schedule. Let me see who we got coming up, because this could be fun. And, I definitely need to go and glance at some of those photos and see if it looked like we were having as much fun as we were.
You know, and it's funny. I've mentioned this and shared it plenty of times on this podcast, but I had the honor of being at the 22nd win with my dad. So, you know, I was able to be there and experience history. Although it's a bit more different from your standpoint, you know, being a part of the history, but I was able to be there and witness it, which was still really cool. And I want to end things on a bit of a lighter note, just kind of talking about those late 2000s Rockets teams. But, you know, who was the funniest guy you played with?
That's actually a really good question. And I 100% could not give one guy, but I'll tell you who is the guy you wouldn't expect. And the guy, and I'll give you a story about the guy who definitely is. And the one you wouldn't expect is Yao. But I'll tell you this. As a rookie, I come in and they put me right next to Yao Ming in the locker room. And I think, well, what an honor. This is amazing. My locker is right next to Yao Ming. I mean, this guy's a legend, and I'm a huge fan. And now I got to get used to, you know, being his teammate. Well, I quickly realized it's because before and after every game, there's about 30 media standing around his locker room, no matter what. Even if he has nothing to say or nothing happened, there are 30 people standing there. And therefore, my locker is actually not a space you want to be, because you got a bunch of people around.
Oh,
but
man.
When he did talk, and although a lot of times it was in Chinese, so I don't know what he was saying, everyone was laughing the entire time. And I just don't know if that was a cultural thing to be kind every time y'all talked to laugh, or he was hilarious, but he had the media rolling basically in the entire time that they were in the locker room with him. And I never understood, but I'm guessing he was a really funny guy. And then I would say this, that probably the funniest guy that I ever played with, and when I think about him every time, it makes me smile, is Dikembe Mutombo. And he was as good a veteran as you could ever ask for. When I got drafted, I come to the team, and he tells me, Novak, I take you shopping. And he literally took me to like a men's warehouse or a K&G suit warehouse. And I'm pushing a cart, and he's literally grabbing suits off of the rack, and he's saying, you need gray one, you need blue one, you need brown one. And as we got like five suits. We go to the register. We're about to check out. And there's like a comedy DVD. It might have been like a Martin Lawrence or a Chris Rock DVD on the counter. I'll never forget. He throws the DVD in the cart and he says, "And Novak, you get this for me too." And he throws it in the cart. I buy the suits. I buy the DVDs. I thought he was going to buy it for me. He wasn't as nice as I thought, but he sure was funny. So I'll never forget some of those moments. And to be honest, he's just a legend to this day.
That is absolutely incredible. I love that story from start to finish. That is incredible. I won't be able to think of Deke different, you know, any other way now other than picturing you two strolling through a men's warehouse.
It happened. I remember thinking, I don't know what I'm going to leave here with, but I don't have much of a choice. He dressed me for my first year and told me I needed to look like that. So I look like that.
I hope you guys enjoyed part one of my interview with Steve Novak, former Houston Rocket and current Bucks broadcaster. So be on the lookout for part two, available on iTunes and Spotify. But for today's episode, that's where we're going to call it. So as always, thank you all so much for listening. And I look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.